Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley. Coming up, we'll tell you if Le'Veon Bell and the Steelers can kiss and make up.
And if LeBron James can coexist with his new coach. But we start every day with a Whitlock. So what you got today, big dog?
Oh, I got the Chiefs quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, the second coming of John Elway. Yeah, I'm coming in hot.
You are.
Real hot today.
Too hot.
And I admit, it's becoming increasingly difficult to discern what's real and what's fake in the NFL. The rules have changed so rapidly around the quarterback play that everyone can look like the next Dan Marino or Peyton Manning for a stretch. But it's hard to impersonate John Elway, even for a night. Patrick Mahomes has done it for a month. Last night, with the whole world watching, and Elway peering down from a skybox inside Mile High Stadium, Mahomes mimicked Elway the way Kobe once mimicked Michael Jordan. Trailing by 10 points in the fourth quarter, Mahomes engineered an unforgettable 27-23 comeback victory. It was pure magic from the magic man, Patrick Mahomes. I have been a fan of the Chiefs since my mother moved to Kansas City in 1984. As a journalist, I have covered and followed the team intimately since 1994. Last night's comeback is the greatest thing I've ever seen. More memorable than Derek Thomas's 1997 sack game against Dave Craig and the Seahawks.
What?
Better than Joe Montana's 1994 Mile High Miracle. Penalties kept forcing Mahomes to perform magic tricks. He converted a second and 30, Marcellus. Mm-hmm. Look at this strike to Tyreek Hill for 15 yards.
Dying.
Mahomes is on the run, throwing back across the middle. You should never do that. With Von Miller draped around his knees, the Magic Man threw left-handed for a first down. Mahomes completed 13 of 16 passes for 153 yards in the fourth quarter. But the stat that stamps him as for real and the next Elway is that he threw for 192 yards from outside the pocket, the most in 10 years. Rule changes have turned the pocket into a safe space for quarterbacks. That's why there are four quarterbacks on pace to break Peyton Manning's single season passing record. No one is scared in the pocket anymore. But Mahomes is a lion. He roams free. He makes plays off script when the protection breaks down, when it's third and long, when you're supposed to throw it out of bounds and punt. Mahomes elevates his entire team. That's what John Elway did for 16 years in Denver. The Broncos had two losing seasons in Elway's entire reign. It didn't matter who the head coach was. It didn't matter that for the first 8 or 9 years in his career, Elway was surrounded by junk on offense. The Broncos didn't lose because Elway's improvisational skills wouldn't allow it. Kansas City's defense is weak. It doesn't matter. The Chiefs have a magician at quarterback. There's a bunch of young quarterbacks vying to replace Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Drew Brees as the next rating-driving superstars in football. Carson Wentz, Deshaun Watson, Baker Mayfield, Jared Goff, love them all. But there's only one Patrick Mahomes. He's the chosen one. He likes the nickname Showtime. It's not bad, but I call him Pat Magic or the Magic Man. Mm-hmm. He does things the eyes don't believe. Last night, he killed and resurrected John Elway. Marcellus, that's how I see it as a fan, journalist, homer for the Chiefs. But it's just facts, man. Patrick Mahomes is the greatest thing I've ever seen this early.
Wow. I agree with you, crazy enough. The crazy part is, though, 1994, you were ready to write this, and you just had to find the right person. And it took a long time to find him, but he finally came in the Chiefs uniform, so I respect that. But full transparency, it seems like John Elway is your favorite.
Yeah, he's my favorite player of all time.
Okay, he's up there for me as well. But let's think about the masses, the consensus about John Elway, that he's at the top of tier two. He's not Montana. He's not Brady. Even though I had a poster of John Elway on my wall, along with Eric Dickerson, I give you all of that love. Why are you limiting Patrick Mahomes to being John Elway when some are saying this could be one of the greatest we've ever seen, higher than even Elway?
Because I don't think everybody understands how great Elway was.
Okay,
We're too caught up in stats and things like that. John Elway, here's how I evaluate a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Can he be dominant in any era of football? As we're seeing now, the rules change in the NFL and the way the game is played changes because of that for the quarterback. You can put John Elway in the 1920s and he's going to be a beast.
He better.
You can put him in 2018 and he's going to be a beast. Right. There's not an era of football that John Elway wouldn't be a beast. You can go look at his stats and say, oh, he only completed 57, 58% of his pass. Oh, he threw this many interceptions. That's the era he played in, and that's also the personnel he was surrounded with for about 10 years of his career and playing for Dan Reeves, a defensive-minded coach.
True.
Once John Elway got with Mike Shanahan and got with Shannon Sharp and got with Terrell Davis and got with some players around him,
right.
John Elway, again, and he carried junk to 3 Super Bowls.
Right.
And then he won 2 Super Bowls when surrounded by the right. John Elway's the greatest force we've ever seen in the NFL at that position, sustained dominance for 16 years. The team never lost. He was the guy. It wasn't Belichick carrying him. It was John Elway.
I needed to hear that because I came in here week one, and I remember sitting here at this table. It's not even a round table. What shape is this? Pentagon, whatever the hell table it is. And you and Tony Gonzalez sitting there flanking me, and I said after week one, with my own eyes watching him play against LA Chargers, he's not next. He's next level. Not only is he going to be great, he may be the greatest in terms of arm talent, in terms of what he was able to do, mental moxie, the confidence, decipher the defenses. I said all that, and you guys were like, it's only 1 week. Glad you're at the party now. Yeah. We may still have some
drinks. I'm late. I'm here.
Yeah, we may have a drink still somewhere. Go to the bar. Here's the thing I want to talk about. This, is to me, is a deeper discussion. Where he goes in terms of all-time greatness, so much football left to play. Yeah. Is he going to be one or two players? And I play with instant success. I call them the instant impact players. Day one, LT was drafted to the San Diego Chargers.
LaDainian Tomlinson.
LaDainian Tomlinson. And Javon Kearse played against him his rookie year, the freak. And Javon Kearse came out of college, 240, ran a 4.4. They played Rick James every time he made a play. It was insane. Went to the Pro Bowl that year. We were at the Pro Bowl, and Javon Kearse and all of us, John Abraham, all these good defensive ends, we had to do a 10-yard sprint. Coach said, set, and we wanted to win because you're in front of all the other great ends. Set, go. We took one step together. In the air of the second step, Javon Kearse had finished that race. While we're sitting there like, wait a minute, we still got 5 yards to go. Unreal. But Javon Kearse was undermined by injuries, right? Or is he going to be LT, who came in, hyped up, and from day one, sitting there on the sideline, Junior Seau, Rodney Harrison, we're sitting there looking like, is this dude going to be worth the hype? He gets a normal 32 dive, reverse counterclockwise jump spin in the hole, shakes the whole defense, takes off. Junior Seau looks at me. I look at Rodney Harrison. He's special, and he lived up to it. Which lane do you think he is? Is he the guy that's going to look great but not finish the deal, or is he LT?
I think he's LT. And the way the rules are now, the way they're protecting the health of the quarterback, I think given his arm talent, given the way he plays the game between his ears, given the way that he's not risk adverse and he's playing for a head coach who's not risk adverse, I think the sky is the limit. I think he will sustain this. I got hyped up a year or two ago about Carson Wentz.
Right.
I get excited about great quarterback play, football players, whatever. I can overheat.
Okay.
I'm not overheating on this dude here.
Agreed.
Because he's doing things that, again, and there's some great young quarterbacks in his league. Carson Wentz, Jared Goff, Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
They're not Patrick Mahomes in terms of all the physical tools are there. And that's what I'm telling you about Elway. He had every tool. We talk about all these great athletes as if Cam Newton is somehow more of an athlete than John Elway, and it's just not true. If you could transport yourself back to the early 80s and mid 80s, I can show you like, no. John Elway was as much an athlete as anybody. Patrick Mahomes, I don't know if he's quite that athletic,
yeah,
but he's
got
just enough athleticism. And then when he gets out of the pocket, man, anything is possible because of his arm and because he clearly understands and knows this offense and has a rapport with this personnel. And so, yeah, I think he sustains it. I think this is the guy. If you go look at the ratings last night, people are fascinated by him.
Yeah.
The same way, the only guy that fascinates people, I think the young guys, the same way is Baker Mayfield.
Hmm.
But I think Patrick Mahomes is even on Baker's level, and that speaks to his talent because Baker comes in with the Heisman hype, playing at Oklahoma, competing for national championships and all that. He was a hype guy coming out of college. Patrick Mahomes creates that excitement because football people sit there and go, we haven't seen this package.
No, you haven't. And it's a flash of greatness. I know you, me, anyone who's been around the game and evaluated the game, when you see a flash of brilliance, it's just like a flash. It's like that quick, but that's in your mind, you're like, that's different. And as soon as you see Patrick Mahomes and that arm talent that they talk about, the way that he can throw across his body, but it's still with the accuracy, it's not a risky throw for him for some reason because of his talents. When you see all of that, it doesn't take a long time for you to say, here's my stamp of approval, now go out there and live up to it. I haven't seen this kind of arm talent in a quarterback. I'm not just talking about arm strength. I'm not just talking about accuracy. I'm talking about a guy who can live, like you said, in the unscripted world of football and still be as disciplined as those in the pocket.
Let me tell you, you compared him to LaDainian Tomlinson, and that's a good comparison. But for me, there's some charismatic factor about his talent. The same way the guy I would compare him to modern day is Deion Sanders. Mm. Deion Sanders was a DB and just an athlete. He was so remarkable that even though he didn't play the quarterback of the offensive position, you would tune in, I got to see Deion.
Yeah.
Is he going to high step to the end zone with an interception? Is he going to take a punt back? Deion had that it, that charisma that just attracted you to him. Pat Mahomes has it in a different way. He's not as flamboyant as Deion. It's just the talent. But Deion hit the NFL like a lightning bolt as well. And that's another guy I would compare Patrick Mahomes
to. I don't see Patrick with 25 gold chains on draft day. But other than that, it's must-see TV. You are tuning in.
UFC bantamweight champion TJ Dillashaw loves the fight, loves the strategy. You know what else he loves? Toyo tires. Because like Dillashaw, Toyo tires are tough as they come. And they are the official tire of the UFC. There's a lot to love about Toyo tires. Aggressive design, proven on and off the road capabilities, tires for any weather, and the toughness to back it all up. There's a confidence that comes with tough tires. So no matter what you're driving, no matter where you're driving, you can count on Toyo tires. Tough people love tough tires. If you're tough, these are the tires for you, Toyo tires. The next time you need tires, ask for Toyo, the official tire of the UFC. Learn more at toyotires.com/UFC. All right, welcome back. I'm Jason Whitlock. He's Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
Mm-hmm.
It's time for some big stories. Let's start in Pittsburgh, where the Le'Veon Bell saga may finally be coming to a close. Reportedly, Bell is planning to rejoin the Steelers during their bye in week 7, and the running back now says he doesn't expect to be traded. In fact, Bell says that despite everything that's happened, he hopes the Steelers will still give him a long-term deal, explaining, quote, "I could be naive or hopeful, but at the end of the day, I feel like that's what's going to happen. I don't think they really want me gone. That could be me being prideful, but I'm still holding out hope." Marcellus, does Le'Veon Bell look desperate here?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't look desperate at all. This is actually a parallel following the beats of Odell Beckham and the conversation he must have had with the brass with the New York Giants to the tune of, "Odell, relax. We know what you want, and we know what we want to give you. We respect your value, but this is not the way to get it. So what we need for you to do is to eat some of this, and then we'll feed you. But first, let's see you get in line with us and our organization and our values." I think right now, because all the reports were, he'll come back week 10 because that's the deadline. Now he's coming in a little earlier. Sounds like to me someone reached out from upstairs and said, "Hey, if you fall in line, we'll fall in line and respect you." And those are the beats.
To me, I don't think he looks desperate at all. To me, it sounds like someone watched the game tape of Big Ben and the Steelers without him and looked at James Conner with 19 rushing yards.
Yeah.
And the Steelers have come to their senses. And Le'Veon Bell being a smart player. You ever text somebody late at night and you up? what you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
And you see them three little dots and they respond.
Oh, you ready? Right. You're like, ah!
Like, that's when Le'Veon Bell is like, he watched that game and sent him a text like, what you doing? And then three dots is coming back and he's like, oh, I got him now.
I got him.
So I think the Steelers are the ones who look desperate here. They can't get it done without Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell knows it. And I think this is a match made in heaven. They need him. He needs the money.
Great. He became the special sauce. They realized Antonio Brown, no 100-yard receiving games. And like you said, 28th in rushing right now. Not going
to
cut it.
All right, to a big story from Denver, where not everyone was so impressed with Patrick Mahomes' epic comeback last night. After the game, several Broncos sounded off about what appeared to be a missed delay of game penalty during the Mahomes game-winning touchdown drive.
My opinion, I mean, the clock was on zero, but that's not my job. He said he looked up, it was zero, and the ball was gone. I disagree.
The ref came into the huddle and said that, you know, the ref, that's his one job. He just missed it. And then so one of our players was like, well, if that's his one job, how did he miss it? Then he tried to say, oh, he was also looking at the quarterback. I don't know, man. How you missed that? That's crazy.
Oh, that was crazy, man. That's 2 weeks in a row, man. The it's delay, it's zero seconds on the clock. I mean, forever. If a ref mess up on a call, I mean, yeah, you should be able to fix it. Go back and fix it. Like, dude, look how long it was. The clock was on zero. I mean, come on, man. I mean, that's not why we lost the game. We still had plenty of chances, but that was a huge, huge no call.
Marcellus, got a problem with all this whining from Denver?
Wow, I got a problem with you saying that's whining. I mean, that's not whining. Sports fans, Jason Whitlock, everybody who's on the wrong side of the fence with this, realize that if I point out your bad, your mistake, don't try to flip it on me like I'm the problem, like I'm the one that's complaining when you're not doing your job. I've been here before, I've been there in bigger stakes than that. Playoff game against Tennessee Titans, Buffalo Bills, Music City Miracle, and they messed that call up. And yeah, post-game, I look worse than them, crying, whining, according to you, because I'm like, y'all messed up. And it's crazy about our culture, especially sports fans, where we look at something that we know we messed up, but if your reaction is not in accord to what we want to see, we start blaming them. The players are sitting there saying, there's a big donut in a zero. Can you please just throw the flag so that play doesn't count? That's not whining.
Marcel, you watched the game, right?
I did watch the game.
And so you saw earlier in that drive, it was second and 30.
Mm-hmm.
And the Broncos couldn't get off the field.
Right.
And so the Broncos, to me, why they need to shut up here is 5 yards was going to shave them. You think backing Patrick Mahomes up 5 yards was going to save them? The guy threw like a 30-some-odd yard pass on that delay of game. 5 yards was not going to save the Broncos.
But it wouldn't
have
counted.
They had second and 30, and they couldn't stop him then. They had him wrapped around his legs, and he threw the ball left-handed for a first down. 5 yards.
But okay, so let's keep listing. You're pointing out all the indiscretions against Denver. Add to that list, one of those plays shouldn't even count it, and you never know what that does in terms of momentum.
You know how many penalties the guy overcame?
That's
Pat Mahomes' magic. They need to shut their mouth and say, Pat Mahomes just stuck it to us. Them 5 yards wasn't going to save us.
But you got to understand, in the flow of a game, that matters. When you're stopping someone's momentum, when you're saying, hey, that play right there that looks successful and all that energy you got from it, we got to take that back.
Let me give you an analogy. If I came in here tomorrow, I lost five pounds. That's what you would do. You would sit there like, 5 pounds.
Wait, because you got a lot of field to go, man. A lot of first downs. The end zone far.
Laughing just like you just said. Like, that's good, dog. Yeah. You want a cookie? What?
Yeah, right. You are crazy, right, man.
To a big story from Kanye West, who continues to come up with novel ways to get our attention, telling TMZ yesterday that he's actually trying to engineer a meeting between President Trump and Colin Kaepernick.
I've been calling Colin this morning, reaching him so I can bring Colin to the White House and we can remove that sons of statement and we can be on the same page.
All right, Marcellus, would a Kaepernick-Trump meeting bring world peace to all of America.
Yeah, I'm about to say, let's just start here. Yeah, yeah. World peace. Look, the core of this, I agree with. The core of this is something that is positive, which is let's get in a room with people you don't agree with. I mean, that's just the way it's going to be. I agree with that stance. However, there are two issues with it. One, I don't know if Kanye West is the proper bridge to bring these two islands together. And two,
why not? All three are celebrities. No, that's all they are.
Yeah, but see, the tone has to be set by the one who's going to be the conduit. Like, the tone has to be set so that both sides know that this is a serious situation. Let's talk about the core constituents. Let's talk about the fan bases of both sides. I could see the pull from Kanye's, the pull that's going to come not from Donald Trump, but more so if you're Colin Kaepernick's side, LeBron James, Steph Curry, many others who said, I don't even want to be around the president. I don't want to go to the White House. I don't want to shake his hand. I have nothing to say to him. I think that's going to be a pull for Colin to say, yeah, maybe not. And then you start to look at the wobbly bridge of Kanye West being the introduction to this situation. I think it's too much.
I think it's off brand for Colin Kaepernick. He is part of the resistance, mm-hmm, and he's just a brand. He has no interest. It's not allowed as a part of the resistance to meet with the president of the United States.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it'll accomplish anything, because even if he did go there, I don't think he'd go there with a genuine, authentic purpose in mind other than furthering his brand. And I'm just not, all these little celebrity meetings and gatherings and symbolics of, you know, President Obama had a beer summit or with, you know, some guys or whatever. I don't think it accomplishes much. I do agree with you, though. If somehow there was some symbolism in people that disagree getting together and quit treating each other like they're evil human beings that need to be eliminated from the planet, there would be some, you know, progress there. But I just don't see it happening. I think it's off-brand for Colin Kaepernick, and it's actually kind of on-brand for Trump. He loves meeting with celebrities and athletes and things like that, but I just don't see it happening.
I think it's trolling. Kanye, last time, slavery was a choice, album dropped. Now he got another album coming out, all of a sudden he wants to do this.
All right, welcome back. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Mark Schlereth and D'Angelo Hall. Let's return to the NFL, where the trend toward high-flying offenses is reaching new heights this season, with four quarterbacks already on pace to break Peyton Manning's all-time single-season passing record. So far, Big Ben, Jared Goff, Kirk Cousins, and Derek Carr are all outpacing Peyton's blistering 2013 season. But aside from Goff, those guys are all on losing teams and aren't even playing that particularly well. I think this is a bad thing. I don't like this. They're devaluing the quarterback position by making the pocket too safe. Anybody can do this. Hell, you might throw for a few hundred. Yeah,
they call me Baby Elway for a reason. I can throw. I love it because I love the results. Watching that Rams-Vikings game last week, that might have been the best football game I've seen in many of years. It felt that way.
Till last night. Go ahead.
Another game where it's high scoring. That's my point. I don't like defensive struggles. I play defense. I don't want to watch Titans-Jags 9-6. I want to see arena ball. I want to see the Super Bowl 41-33. I'm all in for it because I love the results.
Here's what they've done. They've created rules that essentially protect. I mean, if you eat onions pregame and you breathe on a quarterback, you're going to get fined. That's the way it goes, and you just have to put it in context. If you're a guy that's going to spit stats in my eyes, there's two things that I realize. Either, one, you didn't watch the game and you're just spitting stats, or two, you watch the game but you have no idea what you're looking at. So when you start comparing these numbers to Peyton Manning, when you start comparing these numbers to other quarterbacks who have played before, just understand context. Understand that the league has changed, and you've got the protection of the pocket. You're not, as a DB, you're not allowed to touch a receiver anymore. You're not allowed to jam guy. Right. I mean, it's completely created. The rules have completely created this kind of production. And I'm with you. It is what it is. I don't like it. I don't like that part of it, but that's the way the game is now.
Yeah, that's exactly where I am on it. I don't necessarily like it, but it is what it is. Just because Peyton's records may fall doesn't mean he's not still one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
Right.
You know, no disrespect to Emmitt Smith, love him to death, but I don't, just because he has the rushing total, I don't think he's the best running back to ever have played the game. There's a couple guys I would throw out there throw up there even higher than him. Let's say Barry Sanders, for instance.
Yeah, exactly.
If you put him on Emmitt's team, that's always been a debate growing up. If you put a guy on that team, what happens? And so numbers are numbers. And, yes, the way today is, they don't even play the game 15 years ago since I came in the league and now that I'm out. It's totally different.
It is.
Teams on defense and offense, they stay in that nickel sub personnel where they're constantly throwing the ball. Back in the day, it was smash mouth, hit you, let's go. And that's 15 years from my rookie year. And so and Peyton played in a little bit of both of those eras. We were talking a little bit off camera about being able, somebody's game, being able to transition from the era they played in to another era. Mm-hmm. Peyton's one of those guys who played in both those eras. Tom Brady the same way. He's still up there as far as greatness, but he won't be up here as far as numbers because he didn't sling it all over the yard.
I just feel like, though, quarterback is the premier position in sports, in all the sports. It used to be shortstop in baseball, used to be the heavyweight champ in boxing. Now it's the quarterback. And we keep making the job easier. And that's what kind of drives me crazy. I agree with you, Marcellus, that this weekend's games were off the chain.
Yes.
And awesome.
Yeah.
Last night's game was awesome. The ratings are up. So maybe I'm the old dude, you know, shouting into the wind or whatever, because everybody else is enjoying this and quarterbacks are healthier and maybe giving them more protection in the quarterback has made football more entertaining. And so if it's safer for quarterbacks, maybe it's more entertaining. But I just feel like football to me has always been a game of intimidation and trying to impose your will on the other guy. And it's harder to do that to the quarterback.
Here's the thing I don't like about it. There is a toughness quotient that you had to have to play in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason that not everybody plays. One, most guys haven't been touched by the hand of God with the ability to play. The other thing is most guys, even though they talk about how good they were in high school, aren't tough enough to play this game
exactly.
At this level. And you're taking out that quotient. There's something special about a quarterback who'll stare down the gum barrel and take one in the lips for his team and get back up and keep playing. And
but
you're eliminating.
But you're starting to eliminate. C.J. Bether would disagree with y'll right now.
He doesn't have a choice, though. C.J. Bether don't have a choice.
Look, you watched the end of that Rams-Vikings game, which is arena football. But still, you saw that game end by defensive stance. Two sacks, and Ndamukong Suh, Aaron Donald, slamming quarterbacks to the ground. Like, you still have to be tough. Like, they're making it safer, but they're not necessarily making it easier. Let's not conflate the two because, these numbers by all the quarterbacks are going to inflate because the game has changed. We have made the situation where we want to see inflated stats. I give you that. But you still got to sit there in that pocket and take some L's, and a lot of quarterbacks still get hit. Ask Aaron Rodgers. What happened to him?
I mean, they get hit, but to Mark's point, it's not the same. Me knowing – all right, if I get hit, it's gonna be 15 yards or da 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 da, or that guy's gonna get in trouble. He's gonna get penalized versus me getting hit, feeling like, oh man, he just gonna keep hitting.
So you want Joe Thaddeus?
You gotta have a mental.
You have to have a toughness.
You know what? The same thing I said yesterday.
Same thing with the quarterbacks. You touch a quarterback. Come on, is Baker Mayfield out of the hospital when he got that and he got a 15 yard penalty on that one? I mean, give me a break. Same thing with receivers. I mean, you hit a receiver over the middle, and the first thing they do, they're not hurt. They lay on the ground, and then they go, oh, where's my flag? That drives me crazy.
There was a skill to playing quarterback in terms of you would get hit and you'd be dazed and confused for the next play or two. And there's less of those plays now, Marcellus. There are some.
So you want more of them?
Less of them. Well, that was part of a quarterback that could play a little bit dazed and confused and still. That's why I love Phil Sims, man.
Tough
Phil
for
Sims
them.
Would stand in that pocket and take a hit and could still call the next play and get through the next two or three plays.
Oh, look at him. He had to go uphill both ways, huh? Good for you. Like, it's called evolution, man. The game is evolving. Grow up. Nobody wants to die on the field anymore. Y'all stop.
All right, to a guy not breaking any records this year, Case Keenum. The Broncos quarterback had a chance to win last night's showdown with the Chiefs, but missed a wide-open Demaryius Thomas, streaking towards the end zone with the clock winding down in the fourth quarter. Mm. The game left some people questioning Elway's decision to sign Keenum after his career year in Minnesota. But I'm that one guy that hasn't given up on Case Keenum. He made a big play late in the game, took a hit, got the ball down the middle of the field. Yes, he missed Demaryius Thomas, but I still think at $18 million or $36 million over 2 years, $18 million per year, I think it's a good deal. I don't blame Case Keenum. He's off to a slow start, but I don't blame him for that loss last night, and I don't think it's Elway needs to admit a mistake
here. That's a bad look. Missing a game-winning touchdown is a bad look. Exclamation point to a guy who's had a horrible start based on expectations and contract. Since someone's available in free agency, doesn't mean you have to go get them. Like, and I understand there's two reasons why you do it. One, there's a minimum salary cap. You have to spend the money. Mm-hmm. And two, you want to reset the fan base. Hey, we struck out in trying to get Kirk Cousins or some other quarterbacks. We got a quarterback. Season tickets on sale tomorrow, and come out there and see a new team. This team is ready, too. They have defense. They have running game. They just don't have the quarterback, and it's a struggle.
Yeah, they got no left tackle. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you some other problems. When your left tackle has more tackles than Von Miller, okay, in a game, then where Von Miller needs to show out, that's a problem. He had one tackle where he wasn't blocked.
Mm.
And I get that Patrick Mahomes ran around and made all kinds of plays. You can't miss that throw. I mean, that's a honey hole throw right there. I mean, you cannot miss that throw. That throw, you just can't. I mean, you've got a cover two. You got a guy running down the seam right there, eating up that safety. You have to make that throw. But beyond that, like, I don't understand how a guy can average 9 yards a carry or just shy of 9 yards a carry and get the Freeman and get the ball 8 times.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't understand that.
That was mine.
That to me is an issue. So, yeah, he hasn't started the season well, but he has responded well against adversity. He drove them down. They had that play, that hook and ladder play that would have scored. I mean, on a 4th-down-and-10 play. So, yeah, he hasn't played well enough. I'll give you that. But again, there are more issues than just Case Keenum with this football team.
Yeah, absolutely. And what other options were they? Like, they weren't getting Kirk Cousins. Were they going to get Sam Bradford? Were they going to get Teddy Bridgewater, A.J. McCarron? Uh-huh. So it's not a lot of other options that I feel like John Elway had to go. Once Kirk Cousins didn't work out and they knew that wasn't going to work out, they had to go with the best available. And I thought it was Case Keenum.
Is this better than what they had?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I played against Case Keenum. He might not be that big name guy or that big old arm, but he can make every throw on the field, and he sure did dice us up last year. To the point that he diced a lot of people up last year.
Well, right? Everybody got diced up.
Exactly.
That's how he got the contract, and everybody got suckered too.
No, it ain't got nothing to do with sucker. If you just that throw, I understand, Mark, it has to be a better throw.
Right.
Yes. But if I'm a number one receiver, I feel like I could have made that catch.
Yeah. Mm.
And to me, that's a little bit on Demaryius. And I like him personally.
I hear you.
But he's never been known as the greatest ball skill guy receiver in general. If that was Emmanuel Sanders, same throw,
good point.
I can see Emmanuel going up, high pointing that, getting the toes in.
I guarantee
very easily.
I guarantee if it was the rookie.
Yeah, Courtland Sutton.
If it was the Courtland Sutton, he'd have gone up, at least made an attempt.
Demaryius just running and gives you the one hand.
Can y'all stop?
Like,
I mean, look at y'all. You're doing Denver radio.
That's
so
not
you're
a horrible throw.
That's not a bad throw.
Look, first of all, we're not talking horseshoes here.
And in cover
either
two,
you make
you
the throw or you
it,
don't. All this horrible, great or not.
In cover two, you have to put it over that corner's head.
I give you that.
If he'd have tried to put it anywhere else,
okay,
Scandrick makes that play.
Let's expand our sample size beyond just this one play. Case Keenum, first game, three picks, okay, and 3 touchdowns. So you're like, I don't know what to think. A lot of turnovers, but still was getting the ball in the end zone. Has he thrown a touchdown pass since?
I mean,
I'll wait.
He hasn't played great. The numbers speak for themselves.
Has he thrown an interception every game?
Great, but the Denver football team is still in it.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's what you want.
And
you want to start clicking and gelling and still be in it, and they still have a chance. They just took,
in spite of their quarterback,
they just took Kansas City, who's supposed to be the front runners right now in the AFC, right?
Yeah.
They just took, like, they should have won
the worst defense in the league.
And ultimately,
yeah, I know.
Ultimately, though, $18 million a year, this is essentially, to me, this is just above backup quarterback money in this league.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, McCown is making $10 million a year. I think Tyrod Taylor's making $15, $16 million a year. So, to me, this is, you took a chance on a guy. The jury's still out. If he doesn't do what you need him to do, you move on from him. To me, it was a good gamble by Elway.
It's a great gamble, and I don't think There's 12 more games to be played. There's a lot of football. Case Keenum played a lot better at the end of the year last year in Minnesota. What? This is first year in Denver.
What do you mean this gamble? Hold on. Y'all act like Elway is not at the table saying, I need more money. Somebody re-up the receipts. Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, Brock Osweiler. Now we're here.
And he's better than all three of those guys you just
listed. Guess what? And none of them were good.
He's better.
You say what you want. Yeah. I'm just saying that. I love me some Elway, but come on.
All right. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, D'Angelo. All right, welcome back. Marcellus and I are joined now by NBA champion and Duke grad, Dante Jones. As you all know, I'm a journalist, and we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer here, Marcellus.
Mm.
So we're going to put on our thinking caps and take a deeper look at some big stories in sports. We've got a special cap for the Columbia grad. All right, Darnell, bring it on.
Where's my seat at?
Oh, huh?
I thought I was supposed to be on this segment.
Thank you.
Got your thinking cap on, Darnell.
This is my diploma?
That's good. All right, man, we got a Duke grad and a Ivy Leaguer from Columbia.
And you.
And me from Ball State. That's all right.
G-E-D.
I'm going to hold my own here.
G-E-D.
All right, let's move to the NBA. Bleacher Report's Tom Haberstroh just published an expansive new article exploring the NBA's ongoing obsession with social media and asking a question that's long overdue. Is it out of control? As Haberstroh explains, the NBA is the most popular league on social media, and the stars' constant engagement online has been a key part of the league's marketing for the last several years. But Haberstroh doesn't shy away from the dark side of this alliance, talking with experts who liken social media to this generation's cigarettes and exploring studies showing a growing connection between social media use and rates of depression. Even some within the NBA are starting to worry about the issue, as Haberstroh explains, quote, take Kelly Oubre Jr., the 22-year-old Wizards forward. He hates what phones and social media have done to his NBA peers, as well as the larger millennial generation. He even calls it SMD, social media disease. Quote, I feel like we're too dependent on cell phones and the social media hype to our egos and makes us feel good when at the end of the day, that comes from yourself, he told the Washington Post. It's just a crutch, honestly. Listen, I absolutely love this story, read it this morning. Haberstroh did a great job explaining points I've been trying to get at. I think at some point the social media bubble is going to burst, and I think the NBA has made a mistake connecting too closely with social media. I think Adam Silver and the NBA have gone all in on social media, and I don't think they understand the negative ramifications and the influence it has on the players. This story was amazing, talking about some of the sleep deprivation. But also, for me, we'll just start here. I just think social media creates a false sense of reality, and I think that's dangerous for all young people, NBA or otherwise.
For me, I love the story. My sentiment is social media is an app. You log in, you log out. I don't take all the poisonous experiences that come from social media that a lot of this article was talking about. The greatest attribute I've seen from athletes is how we are able to compartmentalize. That means something could go bad in the morning, I could go show up for the games, and then I gotta go back home and deal with that bad situation. Everything's in moderation, including moderation, brother. So, you know, a guy like me could put it to the side, but.
Hold on, Marcellus. I want to stop you before Dante. I love his cigarette analogy. Mm. And I think if we went back to the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, people would say, well, I don't smoke. It's no problem. I don't smoke. And then they went on to explain, well, you know, there is secondhand smoke.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. And so I think there are unintended consequences of social media that you don't fully realize and are a bit in denial of. I think it's naive to think, even people that aren't on social media, I believe, are affected by social media.
Well, if you get on your app, I'm not feeling that. I mean, just let you know, nothing's coming through the air that's going to affect me, but you tell me, Dante.
For the athlete today, I think you're right. It is, it's getting out of control, especially when you have a general manager losing his job over burner accounts. Mm. Like, we have somebody losing their job over trying to see what other people are thinking and trying to disseminate information. What it the negative effect has had on the subconscious of the athlete, because it takes away your natural ability to just go out and play. Now you're playing for approval, and I'm not saying that you're taking it directly on the comments, but it works on your subconscious, and it puts you in positions where you just can't be you anymore because you're dealing with the negative boos that were a collective boo, as I said before. Now they have a face. Now they have language to them. Now they have a full opinion. And we tend to try and look for, as athletes, look for positive reinforcement that we're doing the right things. And the worst thing is the search tool to be able to search your name, because once you open that up, then you open up the floodgates of things that you may have ever thought about before. So the athlete's mental health is what's being attacked right now. And you're absolutely correct. Moderation is the key. They have companies that in that article, which was an amazingly written article, that are trying to show you how to use it for a positive. And I think with those tactics and being able to show how performance is being affected, you can help the athlete adjust and use it in moderation and use it for what its purpose is, because most athletes are not mentally strong enough to use that in a positive form.
Yeah, it's interesting. Look,
most Americans are not mentally
strong enough. Yeah, well, it depends on your personality. If you have an addictive personality, do not log on, because it's going to be a problem. Right. Even J.J. Redick talked about it. He had to give up his watch collection because he's a guy that goes to the extreme, and he dealt with this in social media.
But Marcellus, I think you think that if you don't have an addictive personality, you can't become addicted to your cell phone or social media. I disagree. I think it's like it's like crack cocaine. If you try it once, regardless of who you are, there's a chance you could become addicted to it. And I think these guys in Silicon Valley and these tech companies, they talk about dopamine and what's going on in your brain and feeding and people interested in likes and things like that and what that does to your mind. The people that have created these apps are smarter, far smarter than the people that are using them.
Yeah.
And so, I think that you think there's somehow it's all within our control.
Well,
I don't.
I think that. You know why? Because, look, the cliche goes, the easiest way to resist temptation is to avoid it. But the best way to resist temptation is to overcome it. So I look at a situation like this, like, I'm not going to blame the desired. I'm going to tame my desires. If I have an infidelity issue, I'm not going to blame Brazil. I'm not going to say, oh, you know what, Brazil's the problem. Because you could go around the corner and go get that. The thing about the situation is to start to look internally and see who you are and what's your mental makeup. If you have a positive mental makeup, as Dante said, every game I ever played in, someone was cheering for me and someone was booing me. Every single game, as a fan, as a retired player, now I go into the stands as a commoner and I hear they're not booing and they're not necessarily cheering. One dude's cursing my mom out. One dude's cursing somebody out. Like, it does have signatures now. But that's how the game's always been played. What's so different now?
But I don't think you take into consideration that everybody's not built like you. And I think you know that you're mentally stronger than most of the people you play with on your teams. And that's just a microcosm of the American people, the American culture we all exist in. Some are strong.
Yeah.
The few are strong.
Right.
But the majority are not strong enough to deal with the negative ramifications of social media, of the pressure, of the negativity, of the constant flow. We've been addicted to the instantaneous amount of news that we get. But we get that news, but we also get some negativity, and we also get shade, and we also get those things that come in that kind of pique our interest, but they also permeate through our thought processes on a daily basis. And our subconscious is affected, and the athlete is the one whose subconscious affects their on-court performance, as we see by the numbers, as we see by that study, that Stony Brook study.
I think this particular issue, to go a bit deeper here, and maybe a bit more controversial, but it's just factual. I've seen Jason Witten now write an article for ESPN talking about NFL players and the addiction to social media. Now I'm seeing J.J. Redick as the face of this story, talking about he's getting off Twitter and so, and there's a problem in the NBA. These are two white athletes disconnecting. And there is a particular problem, or the black Twitter phenomenon, I think is really strong for black athletes. And we have made black Twitter a part of our culture and a part of our cultural pressure. And I think it's unhealthy, because any communication that you're not having direct one-on-one, that actually someone else is in control of the communication. Because again, Twitter is not like the telephone. Twitter's not like me and you sitting here. There's a third party that controls what you see and how you perceive what you see. There's people in Silicon Valley that are really in control of black Twitter and what people see as the pervasive black thought. And if you understand anything about Silicon Valley and those social media companies, they don't have black people working in them at all. So that's not us in control of that conversation. And that's why it's dangerous. And that's why I keep saying, if black Twitter was a good thing, I've seen everything good that we do mimicked and some people say culturally appropriated. Not black Twitter. Why? Why is everybody else writing articles and holding up their hands? I'm getting away from this. And we keep running towards it.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Look, you can have control of the circumstances, but not necessarily dictate what I internalize. So, look, our upbringings, just the circumstances were dire. But I didn't take it in because I had my own identity and I had my own desires and goals. So I get it. That can kind of translate to this conversation. And not to make light of it, but you said it's like cocaine, like crack. What did Chris Rock say about it? Everybody always talk about the negative side to crack. Let's talk about the positive side of crack. And you know what the positive side to this is?
I can't wait to hear this.
You know the positive, look, this is social media is the biggest mass group text I can find that I like. Old teammates, old friends, childhood, everyone I've seen throughout the path of life, the journey. Do you think I want a text from you every day? What's up, man? How you doing? Blank, lifeless. Or I'm scrolling. Look at little man getting big. Oh, man, next time y'all go golfing, invite me. Like, there are so many positives. It's not always someone taking a shot at you, and you have to sit there and say,
no, it's not always.
Social media.
It's not always.
It's a lot of positive that comes
from. We haven't even discussed what the reactions to your personal things you do off the court and how you have to kind of control what who you are in the public eye from social media because you can't do anything. I remember I was in a line for sneakers and I just happened to be in the mall and I just stopped by, saw their line. I just jumped in the line. Next thing I know, I got somebody taking a picture of me saying, oh, he's thirsty for shoes. He must have lost his Nike contract. It's not the case. I was just in the mall. You understand? Yeah, and these are things that are not looked at because guys can't just act like a normal individual without the negative ramifications of somebody taking a picture and creating a story around something that he did. And those are other things that go on social media.
Yeah. Steph Curry made a point in the article about social media has made him feel pressure to talk about politics. Because now anything political happens, someone will tweet about it and they'll include his handle in the tweet. And that, again, is why I think we've seen so many athletes, because it's like we think every athlete damn near now, particularly black athletes. We don't ask white athletes to get involved in politics. But again, because of this black Twitter thing, all of our athletes are being pressured to have strong political beliefs. And not everybody has them. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm someone that, again, it drives my family crazy. I try desperately to stay out of politics. Because I'm not an expert, it's not my passion, I don't trust politicians, I don't believe they're honest, and so I've tried to stay out of it. But there's so much pressure, get involved, get involved, get involved. And so that's where my frustration comes. I'm like, I'm seeing people that I know aren't that informed, aren't that passionate about it, but they're piping off over social media because it's a way to get retweets, likes, and blah, blah, blah. And it's unhealthy.
I heard you say pressure several times, and Coach used to always say to us, pressure is self-imposed. So, I mean, look, there's always going to be a cloud and a culture, and there's always going to be the theys, as DJ Khaled calls them. Like, there's always this voice around us that says, do this. And then Coach is like, do you. So, when you log on, there's a responsibility with it. It's not just free-flowing, like I guess some people think it should be.
It's forcing athletes to be stronger mentally and to be more in touch with who they are. And I think that's where training needs to go towards the athlete. I think the different organizations need to take time and to train these athletes on the mental part of them. Because as we see bullying is at an all-time high, you see athletes are folding into the mental health conversation because they are struggling. So I think the NBA, NFL, MLB need to take time and to strengthen the minds of the athletes and teach them how to use social media because it's like a gun. It's not the gun, it's the person using the gun.
All right, welcome back. I'm Jason Whitlock. He's Marcellus Wiley. Over there is Dante Jones. All right, let's move to LeBron James, who will make his Staples Center debut with the Lakers tonight against the Nuggets after the team's preseason opener Sunday. Coach Luke Walton said it was, quote, awesome to be coaching LeBron James.
Awesome.
But James's history as a coach killer is well known, and I'm not convinced he and Walton will be able to coexist. before I hear from you, Marcellus, I'm going to ask Dante.
Thank you.
You know, Dante, he's a homer for LeBron James, and he loves LeBron. I love LeBron, too.
About good people, man. His record speaks for itself, man. Like,
The record of coaches, the record number of coaches he'll play for.
Coaching turnover is tough in the sport, period. But when you have him, you held to high expectations. You're held to win. And a man that's won 50-plus games in the past 10 straight seasons and, been in 8 straight finals, you're held to a level of excellence. And it's no disrespect to the coaches, but you just have to find the right mix. I think Luke and him will work well together because Luke is a great guy. And he's seen that Golden State organization and that culture where they make things work in a different manner. I think he'll be able to bring some things and teach LeBron how to move off the ball. But what Luke has, and I think Luke will use, is a guy who's going to set the tone for the culture and for the locker room of those young guys. And they have a lot of young talent, as I was talking to you guys about before. But you have to mold those guys. I think they're a veteran away from being able to help Luke and LeBron at the end of their bench to be able to help them permeate throughout the lineups and the overall guys, just be able to teach them how to be champions, teach them how to be professionals. Because on NFL rosters like NBA rosters, if you don't have the right guys on the back end of the roster, they won't develop the necessary habits to be in a championship mentality.
Yeah, those enforcers.
I got a great analogy before, but I want you to go first, Marcel. You got any thoughts on this before?
Wow. I'm gonna give Way you to set analogy. The table for the great analogy.
I got a great analogy.
Okay, let's do it.
Talk to me.
I know this is gonna work. One, anyone who knows Luke Walton as you do, he has something about him where he can endear a Kobe Bryant, where a lot of people couldn't find a way into Kobe Bryant and have that great relationship. He did. His cachet in the NBA is greater than even his playing career, and that comes from having a personality that's likable, that gets it. This is a dude that gets along with all types. I'm talking about all complexions.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? Like Luke cool with the brothers too. And it's crazy. He's a young former player who just gets it. So I see LeBron, and stop using Coach Killer, because look at these names and look at the guys that he had to act. And he had a video film instructor, and he was like, man, who's this dude? Eric Spoelstra. Pat Riley, come on down here. And Pat was like, nah, man, I'm telling you, the guy has the goods. So he's not a coach killer. Matter of fact, he's made coaches' careers.
Let me I'm going to try to put a positive spin on this because coach killer is a strong word.
Thank you.
And I think some people take it the wrong way.
Right.
I'm going to use my mother as an analogy. My mother is the GOAT when it comes to being a mother. She is the GOAT. She's the greatest of all time. And she knows it. And so she's the smartest mother of all time. And so that means she's run a lot of households, and she ran her own. When she comes to my house, I run a completely different game plan than what she did. Mm-hmm. But because she's the GOAT, she still wants to run my house. And I have to raise my hand and object and say, this is my house. Mm. We running it my way. I pay the bills now, Mama. I don't care about how great you were in the past and all that. Now I'm daddy. And so it's my house, and we run things my way. I know you're the GOAT.
Yeah.
And so that's LeBron. LeBron is the GOAT. He's smart, and maybe he's even smarter than the head coach. He hasn't developed the discipline to, okay, this is Luke's house, or this is Ty Lue's house. I'm going to let them. He can't let go. He's like my mother to this day. Trust me.
Finish the story, though.
What?
Daddy, what?
But a part of your growth as a son and as sons, period, we have to take the knowledge that your mother's giving you rather than just jump and say, Ma, this is my house. You have to listen to what she's saying and try to grab something from it. But what he does not get enough credit for is that as he grows older, he takes knowledge in and he's just not, this is how I do it. He learns. He listens. There's going to be some pushback, but the greatest teams that are out there are the teams that are ran by the players. The coach does not have to do everything. The coach is responsible for leading, for motivating, but they can't be in control of the whole locker room. They could never have control over the whole locker room. You have to have the guys in the locker room to set the tone for the team and how they're going to play, how they're going to behave on and off the court. I think he's great because he knows how to behave on and off the court. He knows how to teach these guys about social media and how to use it for as an advantage and how to focus and tune these things out when it becomes playoff time. You have the greatest example you could have in modern basketball right now in your locker room. And they need to work together to be able to create the culture necessary to bring the Lakers back
to championship. And just ask Eric Spoelstra, he will run over you on his way to the sideline when he's frustrated.
He's not 6'9 like Luke.
All right, welcome back. All right, Marcellus, you know I can't stand what's happening out there in social media land. So we got our social media manager, Darnell Smith, here.
All right, what's going on?
Convince me that things are actually well in Twitter world. All right, Darnell, what you got?
Yeah, we're going to start off in Lithuania.
Huh?
You know what that means.
Oh, yeah, ball time.
Facebook Live.
LaMelo ball time.
Right?
LaMelo and the JBA All-Stars were playing the exhibition game there. And in case you missed it on Facebook Live, this highlight went viral. LaMelo actually slapped this other guy and got ejected after they got into a fight. We haven't heard from the Ball family in a while, so be honest. You guys miss him?
I'm going to let Marcellus loves the Ball family.
Love the Ball family. All in. Look.
Where's my Twitter off?
Yeah, exactly. I hit it for this one. As on the court scuffles go, I give that a high mark. One to get the first slap in. See, this is the new Nipsey Hussle thing where you don't want to hit somebody first. You want to disrespect their whole life. Slap. And then after that, he ducked the punches, escaped, bobbed and weaved, and didn't even get hit. But I miss them being headline news, but they did so much so fast that there's not much that can really be a newsworthy from them.
Anytime I talk about the Ball family, it makes news. So I'm gonna stay out of this.
Not a staunch supporter?
Not a staunch supporter, but you know, I'm trying to get off their back. It's falling apart over there. Lonzo gonna lose his job to Rondo. It's falling apart.
You ain't right, no.
Go ahead, Darnell.
Yeah, the internet is still buzzing about Earl Thomas.
Yeah.
He got the inevitable burning jersey treatment after flipping off the Seahawks Sunday. But some on Twitter want to use this as a teaching moment. Kevin Blackstone tweeted, "What happened to Earl Thomas is why NFL and college players should read the Karl Marx book, Das Kapital. Or listen to Young Dolph. Le'Veon Bell has it right." So, guys, which is crazier, burning Earl's jersey or expecting NFL players to actually read Karl Marx?
Listen, Kevin Blackstone, I've known for a long time, considered him a friend. I remember when he was a business reporter for the Dallas Morning News. Mm. Kevin, you're way off brand.
I mean, hit him.
Karl Marx. Karl Marx. He's telling NFL players, man. Read Karl Marx, the author of Marxism.
Yeah.
Kevin, this is too much. I don't mind the burning jerseys. People are doing this. It's the Twitter. It's the ice bucket challenge.
Yeah. Little different, but look, I used to get upset when they burn the jerseys. Oh, they don't love us unconditionally. Yeah. I'm like, they spent their money. They burned their money. That's on them. This is a little tough talk in a sense of Kevin is saying what you guys should do, but You're
Karl Marx.
Yeah, exactly. And
you can't agree that Marxism is bad.
Yeah.
We agree on that.
I'm not a fan of that, and I'm not a fan of talking to somebody else's plight and say, y'all should do this and take this stance. I don't think Le'Veon Bell did it properly, but you know what? All that said, let's move on, man.
All right. Moving on to Whitlock's best friend, Jameis Winston. who was named the starting QB for the Bucks despite not doing much in the second half versus Chicago. But Jason, you've been on this for weeks despite all the Fitzmagic hype. When DeSean Jackson was pumping up Fitz 2 weeks ago, you tweeted, wrong. Jameis Winston will get his job back no later than week 6. Jameis has more upside. Fitzmagic will end. You ready to take a victory lap with Locks?
Yes, I am. Mm. And this is why I'm the only person that knows how to use Twitter effectively. I show off my intelligence, my clairvoyance, my knowledge of football. Jameis Winston is the starting quarterback before week 6, as I said, and Fitzmagic ended. Poof. Ivy League football.
I knew you were going to go Ivy League. You just come playing. Okay.
Ball State education.
Exactly. All right. All that talk. Is you finished?
Yeah, I'm done.
I want to see this victory lap. That's what I'm waiting on. Go ahead. You talk about that 5 pounds you're going to lose. Start with this victory lap.
Nah. It'll be a long one. Slow.
You called this, and it's interesting that even Fitzpatrick called it. He said after week 1, he talked to his father. He said, this is only going to end 2 ways, Pops. Either I'm going to be the NFL MVP or I'm back on that bench. It's just that simple. There was no middle ground for him to land. And as soon as he showed that he was mediocre for 2 first halves, it was a wrap.
Let me channel my inner Steven Jackson. This is how that phone conversation with his father should have gone. Hey, Pops, you know they going back to Jameis Winston because I ain't no good. I ain't no good. His dad, I know you ain't no good. I raised you. That's how that conversation should have
went. Smoke. Leave that boy alone.
Don't do him like
That's
that.
That's Ivy League. Leave him alone, man. He did his thing.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, switching up, I want to hear what you guys think about Eric Reed, who was introduced as a member of the Panthers yesterday, but ever since Carolina signed the controversial free agent, Twitter has been wondering why. And Bleacher Report's Mike Freeman think it's because of new owner David Tepper tweeting, racist owner, no Eric Reed. Non-racist owner, Eric Reed signs. Math is easy. You guys buying this story?
Look, I know Mike Freeman as well. Mike Freeman is the worst person on Twitter. I would love to send him a case of Twitter off because he needs help here. This is just a stupid, silly tweet.
Yeah. he's using, like, fact to, like, prove his theory instead of the theory to just support the fact. There's 32 teams. And so he could have signed anywhere, and I'm certain that there are not 32 racist owners. So for him to go to this one place and say, oh, it's because of the racism that existed in the power that was the owner, to me, that's a reach.
Jerry Richardson, the most powerful owner in all of football. Yeah. Kept the whole NFL from
That's a lot.
Mike, on that one. Get off Twitter and call your anonymous sources. Try that. Do that.
I like Mike, but I hear you.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
That's a lot.
Yes, finally, moving on to Alabama's quarterback, Tua. And I'm going to butcher his last name. Is it Tagovailoa?
Touchdown Tua.
Touchdown Tua.
Stay safe.
Best quarterback in college football.
Stay safe.
All right. Well, anyway, he's showing off this double hoop earring look. It's a classic 90s look. You guys like it?
Listen, I met Tua this summer
at
my man Steve Clarkson's elite camp.
Yeah, yeah.
Tua is one of the greatest, most positive human beings you'll ever meet in your life. He's a little lame, though. And I say that affectionately. It's a good thing to be lame as a quarterback and to be a college student. So the hoop earring, I think he thinks this is in style. The hoop earring. The Michael Jordan look from the 90s is his style. He's kind of like me with the one earring.
Yeah, I'm about to say,
he would have been better with this.
What's your excuse? You over here saying, let me do half of that and do it twice as well over here. I can't talk about anybody. A lot of people don't call me out for this, but I got caught up in that whole Tupac phenomenon in the early, mid-90s. I got a nose ring. I don't wear it. But I went there.
Oh, my God. No, you didn't.
I did.
And your wife still married you?
Man, I covered it up with a lot of money. But I got a nose ring. You would never catch me.
Oh, my God.
I'd be at the salsa swap me just buying an 8-pack, just getting them all in. They fall out every other day. Yeah.
You know what TMI is, right?
What's that?
Too much information.
Oh, that
I don't think I should have known that. Because right now, I got Marcel, Darnell, your job is to come up with a meme, a gift, some kind of graphic with Marcellus with the nose ring.
You just saw a grader here for all these years.
That's the Ivy League stuff right there.
A nose ring.
For real.
You know what? That's too much weed in college. That's all that is.
Too much freedom, too.
All right, today we're talking about Pat Mahomes. Magic Man.
Yes.
Put on another show last night, putting the Chiefs on his back in the fourth quarter to come back and beat the Broncos. This is our first time rating the Magic Man. And I've got him very high, a 77 overall, 25 in job performance. I don't think you can play any better.
Right.
24 in character. I ding him a point for leaving college early without his degree. Authenticity.
What?
I got him at a 24. I ding him a point. I don't, the hairstyle, Marcia, I'm not sold
on. The bars, you ain't feeling that?
No, no. All-time greatness. I have him at a 4 already, just off the first 4 games he's played, for a total of 77. I feel very comfortable with him at an all-star level of play.
That's interesting there. You say 4 already. I think that's not giving him enough credit. If 25 is all-time great GOAT status in terms of that, half of that guy will be a 12 and a half. And then half of that guy will be a 6 or 7. And that's where
he started 5 NFL games total.
And set NFL records in the process. So guess what? He's not going to be forgettable. This guy already, let's give you some real numbers, Whitlock. 7 all-time status. Everything else to me is pretty much perfect, except authenticity. Something with that voice.
That's authentic.
Not authentic. I mean, it may be his real voice, but it makes me say, what's behind a guy with that type of voice? Like, I'm just waiting, not for scandal necessarily, but I'm just always a little suspicious that that came out of him.
Listen, Marcel.
You're not.
We got to get to the main point.
There's
no bigger fan of Pat Mahomes than me.
And
you can't come out of the box with him in the hall with at GOAT status.
Excuse me for my approval rating actually being in sync with what I really said in the A block, which you didn't. You said the dude is John Elway plus, and then you don't even have him as a GOAT. You got him as an all-star. What's that about?
Because at GOAT, like, I had Baker Mayfield at GOAT status. But again, after his week, because...
What?
He's won a Heisman Trophy. There's other things. This kid played at Texas Tech.
He's better than Baker Mayfield, even at Texas Tech. Coach said, bye, Baker. We'll see you later, Baker. We got what we need.
I get it. He's better.
Yeah.
But he hasn't accomplished as much as Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield, the number one pick in the draft, Heisman Trophy. You can't – let's let him earn it. You can't put him at GOAT status already.
Man, after listening to you in the beginning of the show, I thought you would easily have him in the 90s or something. And then you, I don't know what happened through the show. What did he do? You start listening to his voice.
I got him high and on a GOAT level. As he's got to get through a season, maybe win a Super Bowl.
Oh, he's going to win MVP?
If he gets an MVP, then okay. I'll move up his all-time greatness a bit. But right now, I think you got him a little overvalued.